All of us admire the attributes of others, often wishing these things for ourselves. Wishing that we were something other than we are. Perhaps the desire to be thinner, more intelligent, more outwardly beautiful, confident, or more worldly. Rarely do we see ourselves through the eyes or admiration that someone else has for us. Those who know us best, who will see all that lies within us, or who love us most unconditionally. Children often see the world through eyes anew, inquisitive, reveling in the simple gifts that life has to offer, swiftly sharing their hope, their joy, their excitement, and even their pain. They see today for the possibility, with honesty and truth. Who we are or started out to be can grow and change with time, depending on our journey, or where life takes us, perhaps informed by the people we meet, those we cross paths with, by opportunities, and those we miss. Loss, grief, and perhaps the most important of all, love. In all its many forms, even if unreciprocated. Welcome to the Tea and Midwifery, a Call the Midwife podcast. Share a spot of tea with us and listen along as we chat all things Call the Midwife. Episode 2, the characters we love versus their real-life counterparts.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Erin.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode, and if you are new, thank you for joining us for this episode, and we hope
you
stick around.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm like smiling ear to ear, like going, yay. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's fine.
Pardon me. So, are you drinking tea today?
I am drinking tea. I'm drinking one called... Pink Citrus Magic by Tea Kitten. I do a tea subscription box, so I have like an interesting variety of teas. I like the description I got with this one, so I'm gonna read it. This fruity, citrusy green tea blend channels your inner sorceress with a magical ingredient that turns this brew into a playful pink delight. Add a drop of lemon and watch it change colors. So I'm drinking it out of, I am drinking this tea out of a black mug. So I do not see the fun colors that this tea produces. So yeah, I should have read the description first before picking my tea cup.
Well, I think that you should do like a picture for the listeners at another day.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like a magical tea.
It does. I need to see what happens when I add lemon to it.
I know. You're cooler than me. I'm like, I'm actually drinking coffee today. So you're sharing I don't know what they say, a spot of coffee. What would they say?
I don't know.
Sure. I don't know. We'll have to Google that. Somebody look it up. Leave us a comment. But I get this weird combination of blueberry and caramel, which tastes like a blueberry muffin.
Mm, that sounds delicious.
Well, people think it's weird. And then when they try it, their life's forever changed.
Right.
I don't think like drastically because it's coffee. Mm-hmm. But I mean, maybe. But anyways. Welcome. Drop your tea or...
Yeah, we want to know what you're drinking.
In the comments. Yeah. Welcome. We're so excited. Did we say that? You said that.
I think so.
Okay.
We're having a good time here.
Yes. It's always a party. A tea party.
I need some cakes. Like Sister Monica Jones.
Do you know what my mom always made when I was a kid that I liked was cucumber sandwiches?
Oh, they're so good.
And like little ones,
yeah.
Like and like egg salad, and like, she does that still sometimes for certain things. Mm-hmm. But I love that.
I like the little like tea sandwiches.
So I'm currently working on making a tea room in my home where I want to like invite a friend over and do high tea with them and make the little sandwiches and pastries and scones.
I'd like to be that friend.
Yeah, come over.
I would like to be that friend. Even though we're so far apart, one of these days I'm going to get out there.
That would be amazing.
I used to work at a Montessori school and they did high tea, which was really cool.
I love
that.
Little
kids. But they're called children in Montessori. You can't call them kids. You have to call them children. But I think that's one of the rules. When I was in... I can't speak. Sorry. Okay. Rewind. Woo! When I was in high school, there was a girl in my high school that was from England originally. And she moved to the U.S. when she was like in third grade. And they wouldn't speak with a British accent in school. And then she'd go home from school, hit the door, and all of a sudden she was like, "Hello, Mom, how are you? How was your day?" And I was like, "Wait a minute, what's going on?" So I asked her, "Do you do tea time?" And so, like, I went over for tea time after school one day, and it was, like, one of my most favorite high school memories of all times. All time. Tea time.
Yeah, I like doing high tea. There's a few places here that do it. I have a friend that gifted me a gift certificate to one of them, and I still haven't gone yet. But
there's a tea room here, too, that's really cute. Mm-hmm. And they have the vintage teacups and all sorts of different types of teas. And it's really, really cute. I love that sort of thing.
Yeah, me too. And it's good food. Love the food.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I think having tea always reminds me, like, of my aunt who's, you know, was born in Scotland. Like, it's, she says it's a very Celtic thing to have tea. So, anyways.
What are we doing?
We're rambling about tea for 15 minutes.
Perfectly fine and suitable for this podcast. So do you want to get into it? Do you want to start talking about the characters and their real life counterparts?
I know, I don't even know where to start with this. Like, who do you want to start with? Who should we talk about first?
Well, I think it's interesting because Jennifer Wirth's book called The Midwife is more like a hybrid memoirs and novel, and the only person that she uses the real name for is Cynthia. So it's really hard, I feel, to distinguish who's real and who's not. Like, Trixie's in the book, but was she based on a real person? That's something that I don't think we can find that out because it's not like these people were celebrities. These were real people living their lives, their day-to-day lives. So it's very hard to research on this topic. But we do know about Cynthia, and Sister Julianne was a real person. Her real name was Sister Jocelyn, I think.
Yeah.
Chummy was real, but we don't have a lot of information on Chummy. And Fred.
Fred.
Fred was also real. So
I felt like I read that Sister Evangelina was real, too, though.
Okay.
Because Pam Ferris said something in an interview once, but I could be wrong.
I wouldn't doubt that she wasn't real or based on somebody, at least, who was real.
Well, I know that you had said something to me a couple of days ago about, like, you know, they're not like celebrities that we can just Google. And then we were saying how sometimes the information, obviously, on celebrities isn't accurate either. Like I told you, I worked on that film and that actress had said that the Wikipedia page of her was, like, completely false.
Oh, that's horrible.
You know? It wasn't bad things, though. But yeah. It was saying things, like, about hobbies she had that were, like, not accurate at all. Like, she's like, I don't know how to do that. Maybe I should learn.
Maybe. You know, maybe it's, like, a different different universe. She does those things.
Like an alternate. Yeah. Like, parallel. I felt like it's interesting because, you know, I'm a writer. And so I had a reading of one of my scripts on Tuesday with some actors. And they were asking me lots of questions about where I came up with the characters or who people were based on. And I always say, you know, it's usual that I combine people that I know. And, like, there's a character loosely based on me. And I gave her my cousin's name, which is funny. And then there's a little girl in it that's based on my best friend's sister. But then when she and I were talking and I actually asked her, I said, if I named a character for you, like I wrote a character based on you as a little girl, what would you want your name to be? And the name she chose was the name of one of my theater students. And now all I see is this little girl in my head, so I combined the two of them, you know, into this character. And so it's based on reality in a way, but also not on just one specific person. So I would be interested to see if both Jennifer Wirth and Heidi Thomas did that, like Trixie's based on a few people. Because I feel like we all know a Trixie, you know? She's so much more deep than you, you know, realize too.
Yeah.
Which I love about her character.
Yeah, she has a lot of layers, for sure. Like, you look at her and you think, oh, it's just a pretty girl who likes makeup and fashion. But she goes so much deeper than that.
Especially, I was watching the episode with the little kids, the one where they needed the cleansing station and they were living in this dilapidated flat and she talked about a bit about what it was like to live as a child without feeling secure. And you realize that maybe she developed this physical, like, front almost to protect herself. This outward appearance protects from her inner pain, which I thought was, like, so deep because so many of us do that as people. So, but I think it's interesting. She really reminds me of the time. When you think of that time period, Trixie really reminds me and embodies that time period. Yeah. And Helen George just plays that character so beautifully. But yeah, I wonder if there was, if Trixie was a couple of different people combined or if there was just one person.
Yeah.
So I think also when you're writing, you don't want to almost, like, offend a person. If, like, you think you're right? writing about them, they might be like, oh my gosh, is that based on me? You know? So I always make sure that I kind of combine elements, which is fun, too. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. And also, Monica Joan was real, because I heard Jennifer Wirth talking about her in an interview. How she was posh. Didn't you hear something? You read something about that, didn't you?
I don't how she was- know.
She was, like, posh, and she, like, the people of Poplar, like, really loved her, and she was about 90, I think, at the time that she was at. What was the real Nanatcha's house's name?
Saint Sister John? Of Saint John the Divine.
Saint John the Divine. Because Raymond Nanatcha's was real.
Yes. He's, like, the patron of babies. Without looking it up.
I had it written down. Yeah,
he's all about babies and children.
He was born by a cesarean or something, right?
I'm not sure. I'm obviously picking up crumbs here from my brain. Just trying to, like, pick up what what he did.
I had it written down somewhere. Good. We're doing good. Really good here.
Strong starts.
Well, I figure anybody who, if you, you know, we have people listening, they can, like, you know, people love to share facts.
Yeah. They can please tell us.
Share facts with us.
Share your facts. We want to know.
It said that, In spite of his name, which means not born, Raymond Anotis was born in Portello in Catalonia. And he founded the Order of the Blessed Virgin Mary of Mercy. But it has something to do with, like, the patron saint of... I'm reading this straight off of a website, y'all, so I can't say that it's, like, 100% accurate as we were talking about
before. If I had my book, they make a note of it in Call the Midwife. Like, one of, like, the little notes on the bottom of the page.
I had it written down, too. He's a patron saint of both victims of gossip and women in labor, it
says. There you go. Women in labor. And gossip, which goes with Poplar, because everyone's so connected, and, you know, that's their form of entertainment was, you know, gossip and what everyone else is doing.
The funny thing is, the fake episode I'm writing of Call the Midwife, I don't know if it's really a spec script or more of a, like, fake fan fiction episode, I can't tell you, without, you know... I don't know. I lost my train of thought. But it's about perception and gossip. That's what the whole episode is about. So that's kind of funny. And I didn't know the gossip part until right this second.
I think it's very fitting.
So let's talk a little bit about Cynthia. Okay. since we brought her up. We've kind of, like, segued into random other things.
Yeah. Yeah, so Cynthia is a little different from her TV counterpart, because on the show, obviously she becomes a nun, which didn't happen in real life.
She married a vicar, didn't
she? Yeah, and she unfortunately passed away from cancer as well, which is very sad.
But she stayed friends with Jennifer Worth for a long time, didn't she?
And that's why Jennifer used her real name, because of how close they were.
And the daughters of Jennifer Worth have spoken about both her and Sister Julianne, who was Sister Jocelyn, mm-hmm. that they have memories of them as children.
Yeah.
I believe. So that's really neat. What else about Cynthia?
I have a quote from Susanna, who is Jennifer Worth's daughter, if you wouldn't mind me reading that.
Of course.
"I have very clear memories of Cynthia," says Susanna, "because she was my godmother, and my mother made a point of keeping a close contact with her. She had no children of her own. Although she married, she became a stepmother. So I think my sister and I were special for her. I still have the teddy bear she knitted for my christening. She was a very sympathetic person, incredibly sweet-natured." And I like the ending there, because that is exactly who Cynthia was in Call the Midwife. Very sweet-natured, very sympathetic, good person.
Yeah. I think I was telling you this a couple of days ago when we spoke about how I was watching, you know, I'm rewatching the episodes again, and there's a scene where she's one-on-one with Jenny Lee, mm-hmm. and she's just so wise, you know, and insightful, yeah. but in such a subtly innocent way. Mm-hmm. She's got such a, like, sweet innocence about her. And we talked about that, like, there is something about the show where even if the character may not have existed and it was something created either by Jennifer Worth or Heidi Thomas, that there is an essence of authenticity and that time period that just really all fits. And I think that's why we feel so connected, because it just feels real.
Yeah.
You know, it all feels real, and It's special. It's just so special. I can't say that enough. It's just such a gift, that show. It's such a gift.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why it's lasting so long, because of how real the stories are, how connected everyone is. I'm currently reading Letters to a Midwife. I think that's what it's called. Something along those lines. I don't have it with me. But it has a lot of letters that were written to Jennifer Wirth from people who watched the show and who grew up in Poplar. And they're like, it's just bringing back so many memories because of how much it reminded them of their childhood and growing up there. So I think a lot of the show is doing that for people. I think it has millions of viewers in England, in the UK, because people are really connected to the story and, you know, that era and that part of history.
Worldwide, though, I think, too. I mean, I think that they have a lot of U.S. Mm-hmm. viewers, too. I don't know where else the show plays. I mean, I wonder if it plays in, like, other
countries, too. Oh, sure, it does. But going back to Cynthia and those moments that she has between her and Jenny Lee and on the show, rewatching it, now learning all these things about Jennifer Wirth and Poplar and everything, like, things just really stuck out. Like, those moments between them didn't really stick out to me, but now that I know how close they were in real life, those moments become even that more special.
It's like seeing the show through a different lens, yeah, or different eyes again, you know, which is really fascinating. And there's so many characters on the show that, like, if you decide, okay, I'm going to focus on this one person, mm-hmm, if you watch the show and focus on another person, then you pick up on different things, you know, each time that you watch the show can feel like a new show, mm-hmm, which is really, really interesting. Because my brother actually told me something, and we'll come back to this, about Chummy. And I missed it the first time. And I mean, sometimes I'm innocent like a child, so I miss certain things and certain jokes have to be explained to me. But he said something about a phone conversation between her and her mother, and I missed it the first time. I missed it the second time, but I was aware of it because he explained it to me, and then I got the joke. But I just thought that, like, it was really funny now to go back, now that he's investing in the show, because I'm basically like, you have to watch this. And seeing the show through his eyes and what he finds fascinating and what he is enjoying about the show, or, you know, because he's a male perspective. Yeah. So that's really fascinating, too, to me, that I say the word fascinating a lot, too.
It is fascinating.
but yeah, like, there's a scene with Cynthia and Jenny Lee and Trixie in the kitchen at Nanata's house, the first Nanata's mm-hmm. house, where Jenny Lee was asked to be, like, what was it, the acting sister or the one that was, like, in charge? Do you remember that, when she was, like, kind of like the managing nurse or whatever? I don't know what the right name was.
Oh.
And she and Trixie sort of butted heads a little bit, which is really interesting because mostly everybody usually gets along pretty well on the show. But
oh, yeah, when Jennifer got the job to be kind of the head nurse of,
like, the antenatal clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a scene in the kitchen where, and I don't remember what Cynthia says, but it's almost like she was the buffer. She kind of, like, was the peacemaker.
Yes.
And so her becoming a nun and wanting to keep the peace was kind of an interesting way to continue her mm-hmm. storyline, even though it wasn't based on, like, the fact of the real Cynthia.
Yeah. For the show, it made sense.
Yes, it made sense. But I wonder about that in, like, real life, you know. She's just so gentle with her approach to everything.
She's very fragile. Like, she's such a tiny person and fragile. I feel like being a nun really suits her personality and her demeanor when it comes to everything.
She's so strong, though.
Yeah,
too.
She really is.
She didn't see her own strength.
Yeah.
But I think she was sensitive. Mm-hmm. Like, she's one of those people that you think, are they made for this world? Almost angelic. Like, has this just, like, presence that's so unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you might not always notice them in the room, but there's something so just really important about them. And I think that I just, like, she would do anything to help anybody.
Yeah.
There's one point when Chummy's making her try on costumes for the Christmas pageant. She's got, like, a box.
Yeah,
on.
The box. So cute.
And she walks down the hallway, and I was like, oh, my God. And I think, like, she even has, like, almost her, she has this little walk that her walk.
Oh, yeah.
Watch the show and really watch the way she walks. It's something I do with my acting kids. Like, I'm always making them observe the way people move and walk. And her walk is so distinct and just really, I don't know. Everything about her is just so cute.
Yeah.
Like,
I love her.
You know? Me too. I mean, I love them all.
Oh, I know. It's hard to choose. It's hard to choose a favorite when they're all so special and unique in their own way.
I know. Well, if anybody is listening and has more facts about Cynthia that they know from real life, like, let us know, because we'd love to know about that.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Sister Julienne, aka Sister Jocelyn, a little bit?
Yeah.
Don't you have a picture
in
one of the books?
Yeah, there's in the letters book, there's a picture of Sister Jocelyn with one of Jennifer Worth's daughters.
It's really neat.
Yeah. And there's a picture of Cynthia in there, too, actually.
Oh, yeah. I think you showed me that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Jenny Agutter talked to Sister Jocelyn's niece, one of her nieces, at some point, I read. And she has a unique connection to a nun helped take care of her ailing mother at the end of her life, it sounds like, too. And she's been an actress for a long time. And it sounds like she feels that this is one of the most challenging roles she's ever played, which
I'm saying a lot.
Is cool to hear. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear, you know. She's just so non-judgmental and, like, just such, like, I feel like I'd want to sit in the room with
Sister Julienne. Yeah, I would love to have a conversation with her because she's so wise. Mm-hmm. I really like her perspective on things, and
I feel like the you know, when Sheila's deciding, Sister Bernadette's deciding, spoiler alert, deciding to leave, if you've never watched the show, we talk about all things Call the Midwife, so there might be some things that you want to watch the show and then come back if you don't want to us to ruin this for you. When Sister Bernadette's deciding to leave the order, and she and Sister Julienne have a conversation, I sort of get the feeling that Sister Bernadette and Dr. Turner were making it a little more obvious, because when they find out she has tuberculosis, he asks to speak to her, and the look on Sister Julienne's face is like, here it is. Here's the moment that he's going to profess his love to her. And because she had been questioning things for a while. And then we find out later the parallel of, I think his name was Charles, the man that she loved mm-hmm. at one point in her life. And so I think that she was wise to what was really going on long before even maybe some of the viewers were wise to what was going on, because there's always so much going on. So if you look back and see, I mean, obviously the way that they stopped and they looked at each other and stuff, but I felt like Sister Julianne doesn't always say that she knows, but she knows. Like she always has a sense of knowing.
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder if Sister Jocelyn was like that too.
I think so. She's described by Susanna, you know, Jennifer's Worth's daughter, as being a mm-hmm. very serene and calming person. And cheery, smiley person with a twinkle in her eye. And I think that Jennifer Agutter, I said her name right? That Jennifer Agutter got that. And I think she embodies that description of Sister Jocelyn.
I found the quote that I was looking for, too, that I was telling you about. When Agutter corresponded with the niece of the real Sister Julianne, she said she was fastidious in her notes about her aunt. She wrote me all of these notes about the way she was and the way she behaved and her mannerisms and all these little things about her. It's quite nice working from the outside in from people. She said her aunt, would look at people very intently and listen very carefully and just sort of give these little short intakes of breath as she listened. Funny little things that just gave me an indication of what she was like. And it's so interesting to think that she saw this character through the eyes of someone else. Yeah. Like we were just talking about seeing things through the lens, another lens mm-hmm. or a different perspective once we know information. And I think as an actor, it's really interesting because you have this, I think, I don't want to call it pressure because I think it's a real gift to have information about a real person.
Yeah.
But then there is a responsibility, maybe less than a pressure. But I think it gives you extra knowledge that can help inform. And then there's a certain point where you have to take it on your own and make it authentic to you as well. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that, again, we talk about essence. I think there is the essence of whoever these people were is there mm-hmm. and it makes it even more just brilliant and beautiful. And
that's funny, you mentioned that she got the information from her niece. As I said, I'm reading the letters book, and mm-hmm. one of the first letters in the book were from Sister Jocelyn's niece, and I'm wondering if it's the same person, because she wrote Jennifer asking if Sister Julianne was based on Sister Jocelyn, and she's like, that's my aunt's. And they had a back and forth for a while, and they even met up and became friends. So I'm wondering if that's the same person.
Yeah. I bet it is. I mean,
yeah.
I would say probably. But if not, I mean, maybe she had more than one. Maybe she had more than one niece.
Yeah.
But it sounds likely that it would be the same niece.
If they became friends, I'm assuming it is.
Because I think that Jennifer Worth, you know, even though she passed away in 2011, though, it sounds like she had a very big part mm-hmm. in the approval of the first couple of episodes in the series, too, because they even, I guess there was, she was sent the first or second script. I'm not sure which one it was, but she was not approving of some of the accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, maybe it was like 55 or so years before, but she said it needs to be accurate. And that's why they hired Terry Coates, because she was actually the consultant on the books. And she's the midwife that's on set. Mm-hmm. That helps with each, you know, scene. Yeah. And the accuracy. And I think it was like a birthing scene. And she was concerned about it being authentic. And I think that the show is very particular about the accuracy of things and the history. Yeah. And I think that makes it really cool, too.
Yeah, it was the first script, because I remember... I don't know if Jennifer passed away at this point or if Heidi found out she was sick, but she was writing... She wrote... There's a quote by her. I think it's in... there's an article about, like, her diary entries about Jennifer Wirth and starting the show and everything, but she's talking about how this first script had, like, was, like, filled with her handwriting on the sides of, you know, in the margins of the script, and how the second one, there was nothing, and that was a very emotional impact moment for her.
So it was the first episode.
Yeah. Then. And that...
I think... Hold on. Oh. I think I have it, actually. Yeah. I don't have... I don't know if what I had... What you said, but right here... You could hear me turning the page. There is a note in this book that has... Jennifer Wirth's actual handwriting in here. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe it was before the show, you know, really, it's like the first, before they even, yeah, because then they go on to say they started filming after that. Mm-hmm.
So it was before she passed away then. That's probably when she found out she was sick.
Yeah, because the next few entries talk about the forget-me-nots, mm-hmm. that we talked about last episode, and like... her actual passing and everything. Maybe one day Heidi Thomas will come on and, you know,
that'd be pretty cool. Yeah,
we can interview her and ask her like these things. So it was the first episode.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways. We're supposed to stop talking all of a sudden. Hi again.
Hi. We're coming
we're
back.
Coming back. We're reeling back in. do you want to talk about Jenny Lee a little bit and how Jessica Raine looks a bit like her as a young woman? And
she
that
did.
I was watching one of the episodes. It was like a Christmas special, and she has... it's the one with Vanessa. It's 2000 and it said it was 2005. I think it's the episode, like in the episode, it's present day 2005. Yeah. And then it scans the mantle. I think it was the Christmas special, season 4 Christmas special, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, it and was because Jennifer left season 3. So it was the season 4 Christmas special,
and they scan the mantelpiece, and there's the pictures of different characters from the show, and they're black and white photos, and you feel like a sense of nostalgia. But then on the mantle there's a picture of actual Jennifer Wirth with her two daughters, mm-hmm. when she was like a younger woman, and there are a picture of two other little girls too. So I didn't know if it was them, or I know she has granddaughters as well. But I just thought that was really interesting, like combining the fact and the fiction together.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that Vanessa Redgrave has really blue eyes and Jessica Raine has a completely different eye color, but I still accept that they're the same person. And I don't care that they didn't do contacts or anything. I just think that because, again, it's the embodiment and the essence of these people that it just, it's almost like a detail that doesn't matter to me. You know? Mm-hmm. I accept it. And how many people don't know what somebody's eye color is anyways? Like, I play a game with my kids and they have to turn around and tell me what a person's eye color is. And they can't usually do it. Then I make them go to the next person and then they think they look intently on what the person's eye color is. And then I change it to, like, what color shirt do they have on? And they're like, oh, Miss Aaron, why'd you do that? But it's, like, so many times, like, if I think about it.
Yeah.
Unless someone has really distinct, a really distinct eye color, I can't always tell you what color their eyes are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what my point was. I don't know. Interject!
Chummy was a real person. But we don't have a lot of information on her.
But there was a picture that I think it was Susanna or one of her kids did talk about, like, not having the picture anymore, but they did see a picture when, and she was like a very tall woman.
Yeah, she like hovered above everyone else because she was so tall. And that's the information we have on Chummy.
Well, I thought too did we talk about this last episode about how Jennifer Worth actually saw Miranda Hart?
Yeah, she saw her on TV. And she told...
You tell her.
Okay, well, she told Heidi Thomas, she's like, I don't know if you ever heard of Miranda Hart. You probably haven't. But I think she would be great to play Chummy. And Heidi was like, she's a very popular, you know, TV personality, celebrity. Of course, I know who she is. But they sent her over the script and the book, I think. And she was very much down to playing Chummy. She was like, yes, please. And she did a great job.
I think she was actually on board to play Chummy before they really even had a solidified, like, first script. Mm. Like, she was, like, really into it, which I, you know, I think it speaks volumes to what the show is. Like, Whoopi Goldberg, apparently, is, like, writing into them wanting to make a cameo, you know? So.
That's amazing. I would love to see that.
Well, it's just funny because, you know, Sister Act 2 is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah.
And, like, she was Dolores, like, at the, you know, the fake nun. So it might be kind of, like, a funny thing to, like, you know, have her in a show about, another show about nuns.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Even if it was a brief cameo, I think it would be kind of fun to see that.
Like, she gets lost and knocks on Anata's house's door for directions.
Right.
And, like, maybe, like, a little nod. I guess they're doing Sister Act 3.
Are they? Is she gonna be in it?
I'm under the impression yes, and I'm under the impression that Tyler Perry's involved, and I made a fake audition tape for Sister Act 3 and posted it on YouTube, like, 4 or 5 years ago, and apparently the name they're thinking of using is the fake name that I had come up
really?
With. Really? So I'm like, that sounds a little suspect, Tyler Perry.
Interesting.
I'm like, are you one of the three people that watched that video? I'm assuming great minds just think alike, but yes, I think that would be fascinating to see her on the show.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I think it's fun. I wonder if Chummy actually had, like, Chummy kind of speaks her own language. Like, she has her own terms and slang words for things. Mm-hmm. And that was mentioned in the book. I'm on the Chummy chapter, which I'm pretty happy about, and Call the Midwife.
I like that name, the Chummy chapter.
And I would love to do just a whole episode on Chummy. So I don't want to get too into it, but I wonder if the real Chummy spoke like the Chummy in the book and on the show. I love that she calls her son Young Sir. Right? It's Young Sir, right? It's cute. Mm-hmm.
But she has, like, her own, like you said, her own kind of, like, way of, like, presenting information. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's just really interesting.
I love that about her.
I really love what Miranda Hart brought to the character, too. And I think that, like, you know, again, these characters are not just like, hey, this person's funny. They're people, real people with, like, sometimes they're quirky, which not the TikTok version of quirky, because apparently my niece tells me quirky is, like, not a good thing, you know.
Oh.
Quirky what it meant in, like, the 80s and the 90s. She's, you know, people have, they're multifaceted. They're not just, like, one note.
Yeah.
You know, you have depth to you. You have sadness. You have pain. You have mm-hmm. tragedy. You have, it's kind of, like, I think the way we handle life. So I think that, like, Chummy handles life in a, you know, mostly in a comedic way. And I think that there's a scene and she's upset and she says something like, that's all the jokes. And I don't think she used the word jokes, but she basically said, that's all the comedy I have in me today. Like, I can't,
mm-hmm.
I can't, that's all I've got today to give. And I loved that. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I was just wondering, do you think that she sort of had to develop a comedic sense because she was so much larger than other people? I'm sure she stuck out. I'm sure she was made fun of. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if she has that sort of comedic sense to sort of deal with the fact that she is a little different looking than everyone else, and she stands out in a crowd.
I definitely do. I mean, I definitely think that there is life imitating art and parallels mm-hmm. with her and Miranda Hart as people, too. And I think that's why the character resonated so much with her. And that is why she wanted to play the character so much. Because mm-hmm. I do think that, like, you know, they say in my acting class, they talk a lot about comedy. And they talk about sometimes the most hilarious people, it comes directly from a place of deep-seated pain. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to kind of look at that. So, like, she has comedy, whereas Trixie has the fashion and the mm-hmm. beauty and the, you know, and both are almost like coping mechanisms.
Yeah,
I think how we deal with things mm-hmm. as people. It's like everybody has their own way of dealing with life, with seeing life and communicating with people, and I don't know, I just love Chummy and Miranda Hart.
Yeah.
But it's definitely interesting to, like, see characters brought to life that, you know, have some sort of element of truth. And, like, I think I was telling you this, the game that my acting coach played, where it was like everybody had to choose between a lie and a truth, mm-hmm. and, like, you had to tell the story as if it was real. And then we had to decide if it was real or not. And then the person actually told us. And then he said, once you start writing and things and creating and you're playing a character, there has to be an element of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and there, I don't know. I get the point. I don't know how to say it out loud. Like, I don't know how to, like, explain what he was saying, but it made sense to me.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Does it make sense to you?
Yeah,
like what I'm saying? I get it. There's a quote, I think, that connects to that. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a write what you know, life imitates art
mm-hmm.
sort of thing.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, where the authenticity lies in something.
Yeah.
And finding the truth and almost like an alternate reality, like you were talking about before. I think sometimes, you know, television and film and plays and all that are that, you know, it's like an alternate reality, but there's truth to it. where truth lies. What about Monica Joan? Did we talk about Monica Joan?
For a second, I don't know much about the real person, but in the book, she's basically the same person that is represented in the show. And I feel like she has to be real because she's such a interesting, dynamic person with the way her thought process is and how she speaks.
Well, I did see Jennifer Worth talking about her in an interview once. And I think I mentioned that earlier, but I can't remember. We've talked about so many things.
Say it again.
It was the people of Poplar, like, really, like, loved her. Mm-hmm. And she said she had a very specific way of speaking, which is what we've learned about Monica Joan. Mm-hmm. Her riddles and
yeah.
her quotes and...
I love that she was, like, kind of into astrology. She always talks about the stars aligning and...
Before her time. Yeah. So before her time. Well, when she solved the cystic fibrosis storyline,
mm-hmm.
Something about, like, salt on the skin.
Oh.
When you kiss the baby.
Yeah, it was
like salty skin. And then she said, I have it in a book. And she walked all the way in the rain to Dr. Yep. Turner and... Sheila Turner, Mr. Dr. Turner. Oh, can't speak.
Help Dr.
She
Turner.
Call Dr. Turner. Call Dr. Turner. Okay. Rewind. She walks to Dr. Turner. I just call her Sheila. Dr. Turner and Sheila's house in the flat
yeah.
in the rain, the pouring rain with this book, and basically tells me Astra. Read the book, and then he brings her back to Nanata's house, and she basically kind of, like, passive-aggressively tells him, like, he needs to, like, listen to what she's saying. And she basically saves this baby's life
yeah.
because they realize that they have the cystic fibrosis genes and, like, end up, you know, the brother of the father must have passed from mm-hmm. cystic fibrosis, which I believe, actually, Jenny Agutter has, like, a personal connection to cystic fibrosis, and I think that's part of the reason why they actually told that storyline.
Okay.
Which, it's like, the show is so informative, and it's helping people, and it seems like everybody on the show has something that they care about deeply, too, which, again, goes with the, like, life imitating art,
yeah.
where it's like, it's not just a show about a medical drama with midwives, and it's more than that. It's more than that. It's, like, actually doing things for, like, humanity.
Yeah.
Which is important and incredible. But, yes, Sister Monica Joan, that Judy Parfitt's just phenomenal. I just think she's really, really wonderful
yeah.
as an actor. And she's wonderful to watch. And it's, like... Every time she gets sick, though, it's like, no,
I know.
Don't do it.
Please stop getting sick.
Please keep her on the
yeah.
show, please.
I mean, I do get worried because she is an older person, and the show is just seems like it's going to keep on going on. I read how it's renewed until 2024, and you know she can't mm-hmm. be on the show forever, so I do get worried.
I'm not sure if the character's supposed to be a bit older than her than she actually is in real life either.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wears a wig when they actually show her with her mm-hmm. hair down. I think I was telling you this, like, a while ago about my grandmother's cousin, Lilla, who was really just the world traveler. She's just so interesting. And she reminds me a lot of Monica Joan. And she also had dementia towards the end of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she would, like, call my grandmother and, like, leave her messages. And then call her back 10 minutes later and leave her, like, the same message.
Oh.
And my grandmother was, like, just... I think my grandmother was, like, worried and heartbroken at the same time
yeah.
knowing what was going on because her sister also had dementia.
Oh, that's hard.
Passed away
mm-hmm.
earlier from that. And so, but Lilla just was fascinating, everything she said and did. And she had a lot of wrinkles on her
mm-hmm.
face. And I always and I only say this because, you know, as a woman who's aging and we're so, our culture's so about not aging.
Yeah.
I do love British television for the fact that people look real.
Yeah.
Too. And is that inappropriate for me to say? I don't know. But, like, they look like someone you'd see at the grocery store and not, like, lots of plastic surgery. And I have nothing against that if you want to do that and it makes you feel good. But Lila always said to me, because I'm really, like, talking to myself about when do I need Botox? Should I get Botox in this 11 in my head? Do I want fake lips? You know, I've thought about, should I get a nose job? But I live with my parents and I have no money, so that's not an option. But, you know, it's something that, you know, I think, like, if I had all this money, would I get plastic surgery? And Lila once said to me, which is a very Monica Joan thing to say, was, these wrinkles are a roadmap of the places I've gone and the life that I've lived, and I'm not ashamed of them. And when I looked at her, it wasn't that I saw the wrinkles, because she had the most beautiful piercing blue eyes. Mm-hmm. As we talk about eyes, I do remember her piercing blue eyes. And she had kind of like wild hair, and she was just, you know, my cousins always said, you know, we always wonder where you came from because you're so different. And then we meet Lila and realize there's your soulmate.
Yep.
And I always thought I loved that, you know, comparison. I was like, well, I'm honored that you would compare me to her because she was just eccentric, but in all the right ways. So yeah, so I'm doing my best to be more like Lila and, like, embrace aging in a more beautiful way. And I think that Monica Joan embraces life in a really beautiful way and sees the world through such beautiful eyes. Like, there's an episode that now we have to Google if, like, I saw this in a preview for season 10 or not. But there's a placenta conversation about it, like, and I don't know if I don't know where I saw it, and I don't know what season it was from. But it was like the way that she sees the world is through such different eyes, and she sees things like, you know, and back to Barbara dying, you know, she felt like almost guilt and making it to a certain point in her life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we have to understand that in life that everybody serves a purpose.
Yeah.
And old, young, or whatever, and I think I've lost young people in my life, and the tragedy of that is unbearable. But no matter how old someone is, when you lose them, we still love them and miss them, and there's still a void, because everyone is not replaceable. It's like you can replace shoes, you can replace things, but you can't replace people.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I went from A to B right now, but that's where I'm at. You could cut that down. Delete some of that.
Going back to aging, I do really like that little thing you said about how the wrinkles are the roadmap. What was it?
She said it's the roadmap and the life, the adventure she's taken and the life she's lived.
I think that's a great way to look at aging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very Sister Monica Jones of a way to look at life and what you've done and how you've lived it.
Well, I think that when I look at Monica Joan and, like, you know, I don't look at the fact that she has wrinkles. Mm-hmm. I look at the fact that she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that is harder for us to see in ourselves, because I look at myself and I think, oh gosh, you know, and I see, it's again, seeing, I think you have to see the world through the eyes of people who adore and love you and see the best in you as people. And I think there's a lot of characters on this show that, while flawed, they try to look for the best in other people, which I really, really love too, because I don't know. I think it's just showing people who care and are trying to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And those people do exist. And it's a very hopeful show. There's a lot of sadness in it, but it's a very hopeful show and has,
I think,
the hope of birth, of new life.
Yeah, I think every episode usually tries to end on, even though this tragic thing happens, there's still life to be lived, hopeful, some sort of hopeful message at the end of every episode, no matter what horrible thing might have happened in it.
I think I've heard Tidy Thomas say that they like to wrap it up in a bow a little bit.
Yeah, so maybe I think that's what
maybe
they
do. Maybe I dreamt it.
But I think that's, did I dream it? I think that's accurate to what happens in the episodes.
I do too.
Yeah. So, do you want to do the question of the day?
Ooh, I have two more thoughts though that we didn't mention. Okay. But yes, we'll do the question of the day. What I found interesting is that I don't know how to say her name, Leoni Elliott, but that's not how you say it. She plays Lucille. Now I'm the one that can't pronounce names. Take a ding for every time we mispronounce somebody's name. It's not Leoni. It's like almost
okay. I can't help you. I don't know.
Rewind. Help. Call Dr. Turner.
Help. We need you.
The beautiful, marvelous actress who plays Lucille is of Jamaican descent, and she's from the UK. So, you know, that's not her real accent, but her family has a similar story. Like, I think it was her grandfather had come from Jamaica to the UK. And so Heidi Thomas will chat with her a little bit. Sometimes she helps with the historical accuracy because, you know, she knows things from her family, which I thought was so fantastic. Like, fantastic and fascinating. How many times do I say those in an episode now? And also, Jimmy, we were asking, like, were Alec and Jimmy real people? Because we know Philip Worth was a real person.
Yes. Oh, because
she did end up marrying him. And there wasn't a chapter where Jimmy was in a storeroom somewhere.
Yeah, right? There, again, this comes from the letters book. There's an introduction by Susanna and an introduction by her other daughter and then an introduction by Philip. Just talking about Jenny Lee and Susanna. I think this was Susanna from Susanna. She did mention that she did keep Jimmy and Alec in the storeroom at, I don't think it was Donata's house. I think she said something about something having to do with nurses. So, some sort of medical facility.
The nurse's home.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure, but she did say that she kept them in a storeroom for 3 months. So I think that actually happens.
Well, there was an episode where he was staying at Nanata's house, and that then they invited him to lunch or dinner after he was, like, leaving, and he did mention that she had hid him in a different storeroom as well while he was actually had been sleeping in, like, their boiler room.
Yeah.
So I thought that was funny. Interesting. And but Philip Worth was someone that she ended up really knowing and really meeting and making a life with.
Yeah.
That we do know for certain.
Yeah. It happened a little differently than in the show. I think they rushed their relationship along a little quickly because, what's the actress's name?
Jessica Rain.
Yeah, because she was leaving the show. But, he was actually a brother to one of the patients, that Jennifer had. But he actually stayed with Jennifer. He lodged with her when she bought a house or a home. I'm not sure if it was an actual, like, house or, like, a town home or whatever. But he stayed with her, so that's how they got to know each other, because they lived together for a while.
I'm just thinking back to the episode where she leaves the show, and they talk about not being able to see the... do you know what I'm talking about? When she rides off on the bike...
I need more information.
So when she goes and they have the closing monologue, mm-hmm. where, okay, I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
Bear with me 1 minute. Bear with me. It's like something about like their not being able to see in front of you and see it's like a gift and a curse almost, but that's not the word. It was much more eloquently spoken. She says, "Why I can't find it because, of course, I'm looking for it." We'll have to put it. We'll have to like quote it somewhere else because I can't find it. But it's basically like young people not being able to see in the future in front of them and what the future holds is a gift, but also their sorrow mm-hmm. because you don't know. I don't know exactly, but I just always thought it's not just young people. It's all of us not yeah. knowing what the future holds. But I think as a young person, you can be more full of hope. Mm-hmm. And I think with a light in your eye, that as you age, like life can seem more daunting in a way. Mm-hmm. So I just thought it was a really interesting quote. But I think you have to just always hold on to a hope.
Yeah.
In a sense that you never know what the future holds. Yeah. But sometimes it holds greater things than you can imagine, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you have to take a page out of Jennifer Wirth's book. and live your life because that is what she was doing and why this show came about. Mm-hmm. And just like all these characters, whether they're real or fictional, that there is a life that's being lived and led. And
yeah, I think Jennifer Wirth really embraced that, because like we talked about in the previous episode, how she lived many lives, you know, she was a nurse, she mm-hmm. was a midwife, she took care of hospice patients, then she went on to a whole nother career with her music and being a solo artist, like singer for choirs and teaching piano. Yeah, she always lived her life and to the fullest, I think.
When you always say that about her lives, it's like, you know, I always think of cats because they always say cats have 9 lives. Mm-hmm. We do an animal exercise in acting that, you know, you assign an animal to your character. And so I know that's people sometimes think it's bizarre, but I always think it's fascinating. There you go again with fascinating. But because, well, sometimes people do, you know, move like they're animals. We were talking about like a walk earlier or whatever, but I don't know. I just always think, I wonder if she was a cat.
You maybe know? She was.
So
let's do the question.
Ask the question.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it?
I don't have it.
Oh,
sorry.
I'll do it.
I think I do. I can't find it.
Am I gonna get? Will someone get offended if I ask if Jennifer Wirth was a cat? Like, I don't think so. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Like, not like offensive. I do. You know. I think like a little child, so I'm like a little kid, so always assume that like anything that comes out of my mouth is meant in an innocent way. Our question is a two-parter. It's, and you're going to answer this first, okay, because I feel like I just talk way too much. What character do you feel that you're the most like, and what character do you wish you were the most like?
So I'm going to start with, I think I'm most like Jane, who I don't think it's talked about Jane enough. I love her. I'm so sad that she just disappeared and wasn't spoken of ever again.
There was a little bit, I think, did they say something about her and Reverend Applebottom, Appleby Thornton, what's his name? I always call him Applebottom. That's not his name. Maybe I dreamt it.
I don't know. I don't remember. Maybe she was spoken of after the season that she left. But I feel like I'm a lot like her. I am rewatching the episodes, as I forever will be while doing this podcast, because you always notice something new in the rewatch. But I have done, like, I'm a very quiet person. I don't speak up. I don't talk a lot. So just based on that, I feel like I'm a lot like her. But I have done the thing where I see a situation, I walk in on a situation, and I double back. I'm like, nope. And I turn back around and just go the other way, because I don't want to deal with it, or I need to get my confidence up in order to go into the room with whatever's happening. And I also, I wasn't for a date, but I was going to a thing where I was very nervous about going to, and I walked all the way there, and I just kind of stopped, like she did with her date with Apple Bottom, Apple B, right?
Reverend, hold on. I wrote it down because I always call him Apple Bottom, and that's not like the right name. It's, although it's fine.
Yeah.
Reverend Appleby Thornton.
Okay. So I have done something like that where I've gone to a location. I wanted to be there, but I got so nervous about it. I was like, I don't want to do it. And then I just turned back and walked back home. It was like a 40-minute walk. But that's I've really... done it. I've done a lot of things that she has done, and I really relate to her. To her quiet demeanor. And I do love that she opens up a bit more, because I feel like I do that too, because later on in the season, she does talk more with the girls, and she does include herself more. And I feel like that's very true to myself too. Like, once I get used to a situation and used to the people, I get more comfortable.
And she took charge a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I think that you, when you're confident, you take charge. Like, you know, I remember you directed that film that we did a bunch of years ago. And like, when you're, you're confident with what you're doing, you know, or you're confident with who you're with, like, you like have a take charge personality a little bit too, which, like, I see it, what you're saying. Cause like the episode where she, they have the baby show, and she basically is like getting Monica Joan out of the bathroom. And then she goes up and she says, you know, the celebrity didn't show up. And so she goes up on the stage, mm-hmm, and like tells them, and then she runs down the street to, tell Reverend Applebottom that,
yeah,
you know, she likes the sound of his voice. Mm-hmm. And so I think that anybody that has a little social anxiety can relate to that, though.
Yeah.
Too, I think, with, you know, I've driven places and went home myself, mm-hmm, a couple of times. much to the upset of other people, but sometimes you just have to do what's right for you.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. Self-care is important.
Mm-hmm. And who do you wish you were?
I wish, talking about confidence, I wish I was more like Trixie, because she knows how to take charge. She knows how to be in the leadership position. She says what's on her mind. She isn't afraid to speak it or say it, or, you know, I just love her confidence.
See, it's funny. I know you're a shy person, but I do think that you have a level of confidence that I always admired.
I don't see it, but maybe it's like what you were saying before, like outside looking in, like you need to see it mm-hmm. from the perspective of the people that know you best.
Well, you have a great mind, and when you're passionate about something too, you have a lot to say, you know, just like even with your, Rachel wrote this, not wrote, but she did this, directed this fantastic documentary, and it's just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And I think that, you know, you pulled that all together. You did that, you know.
Yeah, it was hard.
And you're passionate about it, and it was something so dear to your heart. And, you know, I think those are those moments of getting up in front of the microphone. Mm-hmm. Those are those moments of running down the street and finding that confidence that lies within us all, you know. But sometimes, which I tell my little actors sometimes, is that sometimes your superpower is not what you think.
Mm-hmm.
I always say my superpower is my nervous energy. Someone made me feel like it was a bad thing. But I think my superpower is my nervous. I'm nervous. I'm a nervous person. That's just who I am. I'm a warrior. I'm nervous. But that's part of my superpower. Mm-hmm. And sometimes your superpower is maybe that because you're shy, you're a brilliant observer. So there's your super, wherein lies your superpower. So it's not necessarily where you're weak. It could also be where your strength, so that when you are ready to share those pieces of confidence with the world, it's something brilliant. Like your documentary.
Aw, thank you.
You know? So, I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts about that?
No, I wanna know about you. I wanna know who you feel you're most like and who you wish you were more like.
Well, I do feel I'm a lot like Sheila, even when she was Sister Bernadette.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I touched on this last time a little. I relate to her a lot. I relate to her on a couple of levels because, too, she's a nurse, and my grandmother on my mom's side always talks about a nurse, and she's Scottish, and my dad's mom was Scottish, a little Scottish woman. And so, like, I feel like for me, like, I was instantly just drawn to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's subtly confident when she knows what she's talking about, but backs down when somebody almost like questions her, and I'm like that mm-hmm. too a lot, like but she stands her ground when she has a big sense of justice and stands her ground. And but she's also multifaceted, and she's also like, sometimes she's shy, but sometimes she's very vocal. And I feel like sometimes I'm very shy, and sometimes mm-hmm. I'm very vocal. And most people think I'm an extrovert when I'm actually a little bit more of an introvert. But people don't realize that, because if I'm passionate about something, I'm talking about something, I'm like, I have too much to say. But yeah, I feel very connected to her, and she's got nervous energy mm-hmm. like me too. She's got a lot of nervous energy.
Oh, Sheila. She does, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I don't know.
Well, who do
did you... I make any sense?
Yes.
Did I make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Who do you wish you were more like on the show?
Well, I like your answer about Trixie, but I definitely wish that I was more like Sister Julienne, I think. I feel like she's just got a sense of calm about her.
Yeah.
That, and maybe it's not real, but she's like, I love how she's always open to learning new things.
Yes.
Because of the where she is in that time period at her age, she might be someone who's very set in her ways and very closed-minded.
Mm-hmm.
I love how open-minded and non-judgmental she is, and how you feel so comfortable with her that you could go to her about anything at all. Like, and that even if she doesn't understand or she doesn't agree with your side, she will respectfully respect your side.
Yeah, and I think...
You know?
Yeah. I think that's why Sister Bernadette went to her in the first place when she was talking to her about not being a nun anymore, because of how trustworthy and non-judgmental and steady-minded, I guess, level-headed Sister Julienne is.
She's, like, such a calming presence.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel that, like, I just love how nurturing she is as a person, and I just admire her greatly.
Yeah.
And I admire Sheila greatly, too. But I just admire how she feels like you could just maybe sit in a room with her and not even say a word, but just feel very comfortable in the situation. Reverend Appleby Thornton Bottom. What is his name?
You got it right. You got it right the first time. But we can call him Applebottom.
Appleby Thornton says that the reason why he speaks so much was to fill a silence that was awkward. And I'm paraphrasing, but...
No, that's... Yeah.
I think... For me, the places that I feel the most content and comfortable is where I don't feel like I do have to fill the empty space with words, because I do think that I relate to him in that way, and I don't really know why I do. I don't know why, but why sometimes I feel like that, but I feel like where I feel the most content is a room, sitting in a room with someone where I don't feel the pressure to actually have to say anything at all, but you can still go home saying,
yeah,
wow, I had a really nice time today. I feel really, you know, she makes everybody feel safe.
Yeah.
There's that episode of where Iris didn't realize she was, spoiler alert, call Dr. Turner, help! spoiler alert. Iris didn't know she was pregnant, and that Christmas episode.
Oh yeah, I just watched that one. It's so good.
And she said that she wanted to feel, she didn't feel safe, and Sister Julienne told her that she needs to feel safe, and or she's allowed to feel safe. Like, she really advocated for herself in that episode, which I thought was really brilliant and beautiful. And they got Sister Julienne, and she, like, immediately calmed down. Like, immediately. Like, Sister Julienne walked in the door. But, like, the fact that, like, just this woman standing in a doorway could make you feel safe.
Yeah.
Just speaks volumes of who she is as a person. Yes. And what they describe in the book about who Sister Jocelyn was as well. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I just watched the episode last night where Sister Julienne is working at the hospital. And everyone there is so stern, and they have to stick to a schedule, and like the nurse that she replaced, I guess there was a mother who was about to give birth, and the nurse was like, well, if they're not giving birth right now, it's best to stick to our break schedule, or something along those lines. And when she came back, Sister Julienne have given the patient tea, and was calming, trying to calm her down. And she just has a very nurturing way about her that, I guess, in like a hospital situation, they don't really do that. They're more harder and stern about, rigorous about how they handle things. And that's not how Sister Julianne is.
Well, it sounds like Jenny Lee had a problem with that as well. Mm-hmm. I remember in one of the episodes, but is the specific storyline you're talking about the Thamidolite storyline?
You know what I'm talking about? It was the, it goes along the storyline with the deformed babies.
Yeah, that's the word I'm trying to say that I can't say, but and she goes, and then the nurse actually, like, they leave the baby by the window,
so
and
sad.
She goes and she prays for the baby, and she actually, then they basically allow her to kind of, like, go talk to the mother,
mm-hmm.
which was almost something that they weren't going to, like, it wasn't a normal thing for the hospital. And it sounds like she would have almost, you know, done it anyways, I think, because she felt like it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about more about that storyline in a future episode, because there's a lot to talk about. But it just shows her how caring and nurturing she is. And I think I would love to be more like Sister Julianne too, because you know, we're all human, and I would love to be kinder. And I'm trying to work on being non-judgmental. I don't think I am super judgmental, but I do find myself thinking certain things, like, why am I thinking that? Like, that's, but it's like a human trait, you know? So I want to, I'd love to be more non-judgmental and more.
I try really hard to not lead with judgment myself, but I do definitely like, for me being such a nervous person, I think it's the calmness and the people feeling safe around mm-hmm. her. And like, I think that when I come into a room, I'm not that. I'm more like, okay, hi, I'm here. I'm like really nervous. I'm like, it's nice to see you. Okay. You know, and she's more like, everything will be all
right. Yeah, right? You know, there's like a calm glow. There's like a light around her that she just brings into the room.
Maybe I just need to start to use a calming British accent, even if it's mediocre. But, fun fact before we go is that she prays over the baby in that hospital, and she prays over baby Teddy too, and it's like the same prayer that she uses, mm-hmm. I believe. I don't know. I like the subtleties of that too. Of the beautiful little, like, the well prayers, whether you're a believer in God or not, I think that the religious element, which we'll talk about more in a later episode too, is the subtleties of the prayer are just well intended mm-hmm. and wishing of goodwill, and goes back to the thing about kindness for others and caring for others, which I love. So if you're listening and you made it all the way through, we want to hear from you about our two-part question.
Yeah.
What character do you feel like you're the most like, and what character do you wish you're the most like?
Yeah. And you can write us back. We'll present the questions on our social media accounts, and you can find us at midwifery_T at Twitter and Instagram. So please follow us on there.
And tell all your friends.
Yes. Oh, I think that's it for this episode.
Have a great day.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to you joining us for next time.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Oh. You don't know how to end this yet.
For some of us, the past only exists in a photograph, a memory that may not even belong to us. But it feels like ours from stories told. And the memory continues and is passed down through generations. You may even see yourself in a photograph of someone you never knew, sharing characteristics or similar personal traits. A black and white photograph may hold a sense of mystery, and while it has richness, we are unable to see its many colors. That is where the imagination takes hold, within the gray, and creates perhaps its own story, vibrant in its own right. And while based on truth, it takes new form and grows in new ways, contributing to the future and remaining relevant and ever-present.
Thank you for listening to the Tea and Midwifery, a Call the Midwife podcast. We are so grateful for your support and look forward to you tuning in to our next episode. We also hope that you'll enjoy our bonus series, Till Next Time, Sister Bernadette, The Sheila Diaries, which will be our take on the innermost thoughts of Sheila Turner. Thanks again for sharing a spot of tea with us, and have a